Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Eilish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert, kicking off your Monday with quite a lot to go through. We've got some Blue Jays, some good Blue Jays news. Let me preface that. Good, real Blue Jays news. Shai Davidi will join us around 6:30 to break it down. But Blue Jays signing Anthony Santander, which was a name that we've talked about for quite a while, a move that I think is a good one. We'll go through that and more. Our text line's open at 590-590. With the Santander signing, to change your views on the Blue Jays offseason, what's next? Let us know. Standard message and data rates apply. We've got Anna Dua coming on in about 10 minutes from Leafs Lightning at Scotiabank Arena. That's a game on Amazon Prime. We'll go through some of the Leafs news and a look around the NHL with Anna as well.
The Santander news, though, let's not bury the lead. That's definitely the big news of the day for the Toronto Blue Jays. I guess we left on Friday pretty disappointed about the Roky Sasaki decision, and now something new to talk about. We can bring Blair and Barker back into the building to talk about a free agent signing. You know that's a good thing. So this isn't the perfect addition by any means, but if it was a perfect addition, it would have happened a long time ago, right? We're clearly working the free agent system here. The offseason is ongoing, and the Blue Jays are trying to rebound after a couple disappointing decisions. But in the end, this is the type of acquisition that has been required since even before Teo was dealt for me. Like, before Teo was dealt, there was a handedness issue. There was a run prevention issue. And that's why they were like, okay, we can give up on this right-handed power bat because we have to bring some evenness to the lineup and we have to worry about some other things. But still, it has remained that they've needed a lefty power bat, or at least in this case, a switch hitting power bat who can basically set up shop in the number four hole, in the cleanup hole, and do damage for the Toronto Blue Jays over the course of 162 games. So getting Santander, period, great. Getting Santander at this part of the offseason, I think, is really good too, because it sets up the Blue Jays to continue working and try and getting this roster to be better than it looks right now.
And getting Santander at what I think is a pretty reasonable price, honestly. He'll be the third biggest commitment in free agency for the Blue Jays in franchise history, with a 92.5 over 5 years, which is, I think, the years is what people are feeling a little bit hesitant about. He's 30 years old, but, you know, in 5 years, he probably won't be Anthony Santander. But you mentioned it. He just came off a career-best 44 home runs. It's exactly the void that the Blue Jays are looking to fill. If he's a legit cleanup threat right behind Vladdy, I think that's going to make Vladdy feel pretty good, and it's going to be great to add some power. This is what the Blue Jays were lacking. They've loved defense, they've loved run prevention, and they haven't loved, you know, performing in a sense of getting the ball out of the park. And this is exactly what this guy does. Definitely has some holes in his play, but I think if you're looking at pieces that the Blue Jays needed, this is certainly one of them. Not to say that this is it, not to say that this should be the end of the offseason for the Blue Jays, but I think a really good move for them to add somebody. If they add now an Alonso, they had like a three-headed beast with Santander, Alonso, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Very different than what the Blue
Jays
used.
What a zag that would be.
Yeah, it would be.
The front office that, you know, called power low-hanging fruit to go out there and get, I guess, the two primary power hitters.
But you could swallow your pride, honestly.
100%. Like, if best case or best laid plans, obviously, don't work out, and they haven't worked out for multiple off seasons. Just changing the dynamic, changing the complexion of a roster, doing actually what a lot of postseason teams have done, which is try their darndest to hit the ball out of the ballpark. I think that could go a long way. And you mentioned that the 44 home runs, the Blue Jays were 26th in long balls last season. Only Vlad hit more than 20. Santander with the 44, the only players to hit more home runs than him last year won MVP awards, yep. And that was Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. The last 3 years, only six players have hit more home runs than Santander, that being Judge, Ohtani, Kyle Schwarber, Pete Alonso, and Matt Olson over the last three seasons, as I mentioned. So this is a guy who's hit home runs with the best of them over the last couple years. And if he can continue doing that over the next couple, you can maybe salvage, or you do your best to salvage the next couple. And then I guess you worry about those late seasons when you get there. But they've already kind of signed up for that. Yep. And if you're going to play the free agent game, which they've been forced to do, then you have to enter with some uncertainty about the backside or the back half of certain contracts.
And I think when you said, what a zag, I see that in also like two senses. Is yes, if they go out and they're just like, you know what, run prevention is no longer the name of the game for us. We're going to try to hit home runs. I also think this shows that they might be willing to spend some of that money, and it might be out of desperation. Like, I totally am not blind to the fact that they lost Roky Sasaki. They've lost a bunch of other free agents that didn't want to come here. They finally got one. If there's a little bit of desperation in a sense of saying, you know what, we need to spend, we need to add to our team, then do it. Like, that's the swallowing of the pride that I think a lot of Blue Jays fans can maybe feel encouraged by. This is a big commitment to a free agent with a lot of money, not the most ever, but it is Springer-esque. And maybe they need to chase a little bit of this power and this ability to hit home runs with an Alonso, with a Bregman. Like, there's still an opportunity. And if they're starting to come back into the market with a Santander and start to sign some guys, maybe this means that the opportunities are there if you're willing to spend and guys are willing to come here. And that's something with Shai Davidi we're going to chat about around 6:30. But if this means that there's more for them to get, I'm happy for it. Obviously, Roky Sasaki would have been a great addition, but you can't beat the Dodgers on everything, I guess.
And you mentioned it. The money isn't astronomical. This wasn't signed the first couple days of the offseason. Mm-hmm. You're spending top dollar despite Santander having a 44 home run contract season that's usually going to yield big dollars, but it didn't necessarily. In fact, we've been talking a lot the last couple offseasons about the Blue Jays' patient approach. It has really burned them the last couple offseasons. Like, it didn't yield anything. But this time around, it looks like it actually could yield something with big names still out there. If Alonso is available for 3 years or something in that nature where you got to pay a decent amount of money, but you don't have to sign up too much long term, that obviously would be worth chasing because it's trying to capture this window. I think the same could be said for Alex Bregman, mm-hmm. but I think he probably will want to enter into something a little bit more long term, and therefore maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years is too much in this spot. But having this patient approach, waiting and making sure that you're having conversations with everyone, I think it's a strategy that has its pros and cons. Certainly, it's hurt the Blue Jays in the last few off seasons, but this year, I'm not convinced that it doesn't work out really well for them.
Yeah, I know that the long term, I think, of this deal might not look stellar, just like the George Springer is kind of aging a little bit. We've talked about that in that past season. But if you say you've a window of maybe 2 or 3 years of a really good Santander, you could have a window of 2 or 3 good years with Pete Alonso. You could have a couple years of an offensively powerful lineup. And I think that's going to make Jays fans happy. That's been a deficit. If Vladdy is going to have a career year, and maybe he might, maybe he's inspired by this opportunity to be a free agent. Let's say he's even producing more, and he's had a couple great years, as we know. You have him hitting at his best. You don't think Bo is going to hopefully not take any more steps back. Maybe there's more offensive power with Bo. You have a Santander, maybe one more of those guys. I think this team can score a lot more runs. We know their bullpen's going to be better. I don't think it's going to be best ever, but I think it's going to make some improvements forward. I still think their starting rotation is good. I think it is aging, but I still think it's good. You know, I still have a lot of trust in some of the big names that the Blue Jays have in their rotation. Can it get better? Yes. I think this is where the fans, and we have our text line open at 590-590. A lot of people are chiming in the same kind of sentiment that this is a great start. This is something that the Blue Jays should have done. Maybe it felt excruciating to get this point, and it has been, but this is a good start to hopefully 2 or 3 more adds that the Blue Jays can still make. Like, there are still guys that can make a difference to this roster, and I think that's where you want to see them go next.
So objectively, it's been a better offseason than the last two. I think we could say that for certain. Can we say it's successful, though, just like without the relative terms of the failures?
For me, not yet.
Of the past. Okay, they've signed a seventh inning guy. It was their own seventh inning guy, Jimmy Garcia. They've signed a ninth inning guy, Jeff Hoffman. So you've signed two really important pieces in your bullpen. Andrés Giménez is acquired defensive specialist, going to play up the middle. And now the cleanup hitter that they've been without for 2 years in Anthony Santander in the fold. I will give them a moderately successful offseason here. Like, I think if you were a more complete team coming in that didn't win only 74 times last year, and you added four really important vacancies on the roster in the manner that they have, you'd be feeling really good about what you have. But the problem is, they're starting from something that was pretty barren. And yeah, they probably have to do more to be a real player in the American League East. Maybe they don't have to do too much more to be in the playoff hunt. I think they have designs of at least being in that race. We know that's how this organization operates. They want to play meaningful games down the stretch. They want to make the playoffs. every single year. But just all told, what they've been able to accomplish, it's been pretty good. And if you take away the heartbreak, you take away the Miles Straw mistake, I think you could feel a little bit better about it. But yeah, I think the glass half full, or the most important thing from the glass half full perspective, is that there's still time and there's still talent out there. And the Blue Jays could make this a pretty, like, objectively successful offseason if they can pull one more move out, I think.
I don't know if I'm there fully. I think what would get me there to successful, the word successful for me is like a passing grade that isn't just like a B. Like, in a year where I feel better about my team, would be to have not botched the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. situation. Like, that to me is really hard to stomach. You can add a Santander, you can get a Jimenez, you can get some a seventh and a ninth inning guy, and that is good. But to go from successful, like to use the word successful, I still think about what's next, and that to me is not losing Vlad in free agency, not losing Bo at the end of this year, because this season might be a little better for the Blue Jays. They might win more games, they might hit more home runs. But if you lose someone like Vladdy because you kind of botched the situation, I can't get to successful yet. But that's still not over.
Signing a bunch of bad contracts, or at least ones that could become problematic, and not actually signing the most important one something was spooking you, whether it was the fact that you don't believe he's generational, or you think eventually the bat isn't going to be what it is, or you think there's going to be a steady decline from this point on. Like, I get some concerns, but if you just go out and give money to, not everybody, but to Springer, knowing the potential pitfalls, to Santander, knowing the potential pitfalls, maybe Alonso, maybe Bregman, understanding potential pitfalls, well, that doesn't really add up.
All right. We're going to talk a lot more Blue Jays. We're going to do our Botano Best Bet segment as well, looking at some of the future odds for the Blue Jays this season. And then Shai Davidi will join us at 6:30. But let's pivot over to a little hockey talk with Anna Dua of Sportsnet. I think it's your inaugural or maybe second appearance on the Fan Preview, but we appreciate you coming on, Anna. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry. This is like the worst angle of all time in the history of the world. And I'm like so blue in this press box, but I'm doing well. I'm doing good. I love the sweater, Ailish.
Yes, thank you. I was at the game last night. We'll get to that. We'll talk about our Bills to wrap up our hit, but I am well recovered and ready to talk. Bills and Leafs. We'll start with the Leafs because, of course, you're there. They're hosting the Lightning tonight. And Lightning, like, so I'm looking at the Lightning. They're quietly lurking, 7 points back from the Leafs, but three games in hand. And I don't ever want to count that team out. I don't think that their championship window has closed. They're a team that I think we've overlooked a little bit. So are they maybe a team to fear down the stretch if they get a couple wins and they make up for having three games in hand on the Leafs?
I think so, for sure. I mean, when we take a look at, like, the Hart Trophy conversation, I feel like the player for every single season that seems to slip out of it is Nikita Kucherov. And once again, he's having a ridiculous year. The Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, it's crazy how Florida has kind of become, like, a powerhouse state in hockey. I don't think anyone wants to play either of these teams come playoff time. So I feel like they're always a threat, but honestly, like, these are like the worst words to ever say in Toronto, and I know I'm going to regret saying it, but being around this team this entire season, it genuinely does feel different. I feel like they're buying into Craig Berube's new system. I feel like they're not afraid to try new things. They're not running back the same thing years and years that they have done in the past. So it does feel different. They did get Tampa's number, so maybe that's not the opponent the Leafs are most worried about, but with Nikita Kucherov and the team that the Lightning have, look at how many of those players are on Team Canada's roster for Four Nations. Like, you're always going to be a little bit nervous.
I want to ask you a little bit more to expand on the clarity that you've uncovered being around the team a little bit more, but still on the Lightning for a second. You could do the blame pie, credit pie thing, whatever you want. But when you look at the success of the Lightning and how they are enduring, how they continue despite losing players, getting older, being somewhat fat and happy because they won a bunch of championships, or at least not getting themselves to that fat and happy state. Like, what is driving their continued success for you? Do you look at coaching first and foremost? Do you look at the management team first and foremost? Do you look at maybe the stubbornness of some of the key players and Andrei Vasilevsky, Victor Hedman, Nikita Kucherov, and down the line? Like, what comes to mind first when you think of how they've continued to be what they are, their longevity being something that most teams and organizations can't really measure up to?
I mean, I think if I had to choose one, I would go with John Cooper and everything he's been able to do for this franchise. I think if there were some differences in, like, the way we evaluate certain awards, there is an award that he should have won many a times for what he's done for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they're like the Boston Bruins. We have this team that like occurs every now and then, and the Bruins maybe are just on the tail end of that, where finally we're seeing some weaknesses in this franchise. But Tampa's one of those teams where they were a dynasty. They are not going away. And it reminds me of how everyone's down and out and they're saying, oh, the Bruins' best years are behind them. The best years are behind them. And no matter what happens in Tampa, they manage to stick around. So I think they're like the new Boston Bruins in the way they just keep lingering. But I would give that credit to John Cooper and what he's been able to do.
Yeah, winning can create a pretty good culture. Leafs looking to get that winning streak started. But maybe the culture is a little bit different, as you mentioned, being around this team. I think Saturday night, and Justin and I were on the Sportsnet 590, the fan radio broadcast. We're watching that team. And after the first period, it was pretty dismal coming on and doing the intermission show. But, you know, a huge character comeback. How about that against the Habs? So what do you learn about a team in a game like that? And maybe what have you seen in sort of the patterns of them winning from behind, winning with ways where it is reliant on your superstars, and maybe finding some depth scoring along the way too?
Yeah, they're a really resilient team, I would say. Like, everyone was kind of down and out, not to pull like a William Nylander about like this happens to teams and there's not really too much to worry about. But I mean, this team was undefeated for a chunk of games to start this year. They were on a hot winning streak. They lose a couple of games, and of course in Toronto we're freaking out, but the way this team is able to battle back against some really significant opponents, they are down, it doesn't faze them. Their comeback against Montreal definitely was very, very fun to watch. That was a crazy game throughout. Usually it's the other way around when we're in Montreal, where we have a good lead and then things start to turn. But I think the Leafs just aren't afraid to buy into the identity that Craig Berube's brought to this team. Look at how often the lines have changed so far this season. We're not afraid to move players around. Everyone is excited to play in the role that they're in. There's been so many injuries and a lot of players have kind of had to shuffle up the lineup, move around, and it seems like they're really bought into the team identity. Just like everything he's brought to this organization, he's open to listening to the players. He said the other day that like William Nylander specifically is a guy that like he may not listen to all of his ideas, but he wants to hear them regardless of what he has to say. And you kind of get that vibe that the team trusts him. The team likes to play for him. In Carolina, when I was down there, which was kind of the start of their losing spell, I talked to Steven Lorenz about what Craig Berube was like as a coach, and he said he reminded him a lot of the coaches he's had, and like Rod Brind'Amour and the success he had in Florida. And this is a guy who's won a Stanley Cup championship, and if he's saying that that's the energy that Craig Berube brings to this locker room, you like to hear that if you're a Leafs fan, for sure.
So Carolina's an interesting comparison because Carolina is like uniformly the same always, or at least it seems like that to me. And the Maple Leafs, as you certainly know now, and we all understand and have understood for a long time, like they can be up and down. They've been up and down just in this recent stretch here. Like when things are not going well for the Leafs, like what's your best explanation for it? Because yeah, you mentioned Nylander, he's an enigma. He's up, he's down. And you kind of see the Leafs through Nylander sometimes. But I think if you could solve that question, why they are how they are when things are going poorly, I think that would, allow a lot of people from ripping out their hair. To stop ripping out there.
I think William Nylander is like a godsend for Toronto media. First of all, I think if there was ever a player born to play in Toronto, it's William Nylander with the way he handles all of these questions. But there's not really been a period of time, honestly, where I've been genuinely concerned about what's going on with Toronto. First of all, they still are missing Anthony Stolarz, who was putting up Vezina caliber numbers, right? And you have that gone. Joseph Woll is having more responsibility than he initially bargained for, and they're kind of trying to figure out what to do. And good news is that Stoli is probably coming back pretty soon for the team. But that's been a story throughout the year for the Leafs. Austin's out. Max Pacioretty's out. They come back dealing with injuries, finding their own. And then when push comes to shove, they're doing well in the standings. They're still competitive, even when some of their key players are out. And there's players that I feel like, even though we talk about the Leafs so much, that we don't talk enough about. Like, Mitch Marner is 1 point behind Connor McDavid's in the league standings right now. And granted, McDavid has played a couple less games than Mitch Marner has had this year, but like top five in the league is nothing short to be amazed about. William Nylander's right up there in the goal scoring totals, and it's a full team effort for a team that has missed Austin Matthews for a decent amount of time. And Austin's finding his scoring power right now. It seems like they're not stressed. It's not if one player goes down like last year during the playoffs when you have all those questions about when are players coming back into the lineup against Boston? There was like a sense of stress. Right now, I feel like the Leafs know what to do, and they've been handed some really bad injury luck, but the players step up. Their depth scoring steps up. There's players on the blue line like Myers that have impressed me that I think a lot of fans weren't necessarily comfortable with to like start the campaign when he came up to Toronto. And then we have some interesting prospects as well that are climbing the ranks. Fraser Minton, they love him here. The coaches love him here. The players love him here. So he's another piece that could be valuable come playoff time. It just the vibes are good in Toronto, guys. I'm the optimistic Leafs media member right now. I know there's not a ton of us.
and you mentioned Fraser Minton. He's going to be in the lineup tonight, 3C with Robertson and Domi. Okay, we're talking to Anna Dua of Sportsnet ahead of Leafs Lightning tonight. But let's look around the NHL because I know you're foot in both camps, a little Canadian-American split. But let's talk about the Canadian teams because I think you can feel the energy around maybe having all of them potentially be in a playoff spot or at least right on the cusp of it. We've got Leafs, Oilers, and Jets in, but the Sens are in wildcard one. Canadians just 2 points back of them. The Flames in wildcard spot two with the Canucks 1 point back. If you had to pick how many teams, and I know you asked your followers this, so I'm wondering if you got the answer, but how many are going to make the playoffs? Can we get all seven? Are we going to get like six of seven? I would love them all.
I would love them all too. I know I had like a friendly wager on this. I said this last year. So during the Stanley Cup final, I said if the Oilers pull off the reverse sweep on the NHL Network that I would put maple syrup on everything I ate for 2 weeks. And now I said if every Canadian team makes the playoffs this year, I'll put maple syrup on every single thing I eat for 2 weeks. But it genuinely could happen. I would love to see it happen. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Do I think we're going to see 5 out of 7? I think, yeah, we are going to see 5 out of 7. And I wouldn't be shocked if all 7 made it. And it's just when you get into this division, especially out east, there are so many teams competing for those last two wildcard spots. And there's teams that we're down and out about that are slowly climbing back up the ranks again. Like it really, like last year when it came down to the last week to see whether the Flyers were going to make it, the Penguins were going to make it, the Capitals were going to make it. It's that on steroids this season because it's really, it seems like we aren't even talking about the season Columbus is having. We're not really talking about like New York slowly finally getting back into the mix. And that's a team that when they get hot, they become dangerous and everyone is kind of down about them right now. So I think it's going to be competitive. I will say 5 out of 7, which I would be very happy with.
Okay. And then we did promise it. Just quick Bills pulse check. Was that the game? The vibes are great there. And I know you're a resident Bills Mafia member. So how are we feeling about Sunday?
Oh my God, I'm feeling so good. I almost died. I would not have been on the show if Mark Andrews has caught that football for those 2 points. I would not have been making this appearance, but my heart was not doing well. My heart is doing great right now. It's the same old story, man. This is like Leafs Bruins, but like to a completely different level is the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs playing each other once again. And I feel like it's Canada and America's team right now. I think the only people rooting for the Chiefs are in Kansas City. Yes. I wouldn't even be shocked if the rest of Missouri is rooting for the Buffalo Bills right now. How could you not? Like the vibes there are just elite. They have such great fans and the city of Buffalo deserves something. Okay. The Sabres aren't bringing anything. The Bills got to carry the vibes for now.
Well, we should tell Sportsnet that if the Bills make the Super Bowl, Anna and I would love to attend.
We have to go.
Yeah. We would be a great representation of Bills Mafia, Sportsnet media. We would behave ourselves. So we'll put this out in the atmosphere and hopefully they can get themselves there. Anna, we appreciate you jumping on. We got to let you go, but enjoy the game and thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. No guarantee on the behavior at the Super Bowl, though, Ailish. Yeah, I don't know.
There was a little asterisk beside that, to be honest. Okay, see you, Anna. Go Bills. That's Anna Dua of Sportsnet. We got Leafs and Lightning later on Amazon Prime tonight. But we have a bunch of games on the network on Sportsnet Plus if you're looking for hockey. Today was Martin Luther King Day, so a lot of sports happening throughout the day. But there's still some to come. We got Blue Jackets and Islanders at 7:30, Hurricanes and Blackhawks at 8:30. Jets in Utah at 9:30 and Penguins and Kings at 10:30, all on Sportsnet Plus. All right. Are you ready to? I don't know if Justin's turret is working.
Do best bets on the other side.
Oh, I did hear you. Try that. Just say one thing.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
All right. As long as we can hear you, we will.
I'm a little malfunctioning over here.
You are malfunctioning.
Maybe that's a good thing. It was allowing you and
at least you're not having a nosebleed like I did last week.
Interview.
Okay. All right. So I think we can move forward. All right. Let's do our best.
It's a pretty helpless feeling. This.
Yes, it is. It's a bit scary on TV, right? Like at least your nose. Looks all right. Okay. Time now for Best Bets brought to you by Betano. We just spent the first little part of the show talking about the Toronto Blue Jays and their big signing of Anthony Santander and potentially what that means to the team moving forward, where they might be able to continue adding because it doesn't feel like this is it. They're going to spend some money. Maybe a little desperation means that they can add more in free agency, maybe a pitcher, another bat. We think their bullpen will be better. The rotation is fine for now, maybe a little old, but they can add there. There'll be Motivation Station. As you know, I'm all about Motivation Station with Bo and Vlad looking for off-season deals. And signing Santander is going to help win baseball games. So we're looking at some of the projections for the Blue Jays on Betano, and we found two that are intriguing to us.
Yeah, I think it's time to buy the Blue Jays. Maybe not to make the playoffs, maybe not to win the AL East, maybe not to
betting them to make
win the
playoffs,
World Series. You might be a little bit more ambitious than me, but over 76.5 wins is the over under for the Blue Jays in 2025. And again, like, they won 74 games last year, so you got to be three games better. Let me just list the things that went wrong last year for the Blue Jays. Bo Bichette played exactly half the games and was a negative WAR player because he got hurt. Danny Jansen got hurt. George Springer was awful. Alek Manoah was a non-factor. The offseason, as we've been outlining, was absolutely brutal. The team sold off assets at the deadline, so was not putting its best foot forward the last couple of months of the season. You had the Aurelvis Martinez thing, the Ricky Tiedemann injuries. Aside from Vladdy, nothing went right at all. They still won 74 games. Why they should improve? Well, we've been talking about it. Contract seasons for the two most important players, Bo and Vlad. Santander, cleanup hitter, finally added. Bullpen was supplemented. And there's more reason to add as we go here because they want to be far better than 77 wins. So I think all those reasons add up to a over 76.5 at -111. Maybe it's a parlay piece with other things because it's 8 months of waiting on minus money. I don't know if that's my jam, but I think the Blue Jays are going to win over 77 games this year. So I think that's a bet right now on Betano.
Yeah, that one's my favorite as well. I'll shoot a little bit higher, and that will be the Blue Jays to make the playoffs at +320. Out of all the teams in the Betano rankings there going through, the Blue Jays have, quite a lot riding against them. But I'm an optimist, and I think with the signing of Anthony Santander, this might mean more for the Blue Jays moving forward. They might add a couple players, and I like to be on the side of shooting for the stars. So Blue Jays make the playoffs +320, another option there, but I do love your bet of Blue Jays over 76.5 wins. I think just the few additions they're already at now on this day of January 20th, they can get there. I think they can get a little bit better, maybe sneak into that wild card spot, and that'll count.
Expanded playoffs. Tigers made it last year. They're going to be half the teams in the American League are not going to be interested in actually making the playoffs. We know the Blue Jays will be. I don't think that's an awful bet either.
Thank you. I agree. Okay, we'll take a quick break. That was Best Bets brought to you by Betano. Tap into Betano today. We'll talk more Blue Jays on the other side of the break with Shai Davidi. We'll talk about Anthony Santander and what might be coming still for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We are separated. Justin is so far away.
It's kind of reflecting, I couldn't hear you guys talk about the Bills, but it reflects sort of the big game over the weekend with me being on the Ravens side all the way over here.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
You sort of on like a bit of a perch, like you're a little taller than I am over there with the Bills, which makes a lot of sense given how well it went in Buffalo.
Yeah, it was a blast. Didn't lose my voice. I was very respectful of my career, but...
I mean, it didn't seem like you were being overly respectful.
What do you mean?
There was multiple IG posts of you screaming. That wasn't like...
Well, you know...
Pure protection of the vocal cord, was it?
It could have been more rowdy, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a long day, but so worth it. Like, just to see the Bills win that game against the Ravens, and in that fashion where I thought I was slipping away. And then
were you in the corner with Mark Andrews dropping balls that anyone...
Well, I had a great view of...
The pulse could catch?
It was awesome. Like, just really, we dished out for some good seats, and I'm glad we did. Usually I'm up at the top of the,
I don't know if that's overly true.
Yeah, usually, every Bills game I've ever gone to, I've been in the 300s looking down upon the field, and I was 9 rows up from the end zone there. It was really good. Nice on the side.
Are they going to beat Kansas City?
You know, possibly. I don't know. It's tough. I don't think that was like their most dominant football game of to say the least. But you sometimes have to win in different fashions. And the Blue Jays, the Bills winning last night in the way they did may show that like luck's on their side. But I gotta say it, you gotta beat Kansas City and the refs.
Yeah, two things on that. Like, yeah, okay, the Ravens outgained the Bills, but the Bills didn't have to outgain the Ravens because the Ravens just continued to give them every opportunity.
Yeah, the Ravens made a lot of mistakes.
Short fields, like, clearly, the Bills were going to be in the mode where they didn't have to outgain a team that was chasing. So I think they were full value for the win, despite Lamar Jackson playing really poorly, but that's partly because of what the Bills were doing. But I think the Chiefs thing could help you here, though. Because everyone hates the Chiefs. Everyone is calling conspiracy against the refs.
That's correct.
It is at its loudest voice right now. And for that reason, there might be like some sort of pushback on that.
And I'm down for that.
Everyone actually pays attention to Mahomes being a runner and all these other things that people are calling shenanigans on. So it might be a good spot for the Bills in the AFC Championship.
Okay, I love the confidence. And we need all the friends and family to be on board with the Bills that we can get. And if that means saying that the Chiefs are getting the luck of the draw a little bit and the reffing, then I'll take it. All right, let's shift back to some baseball chat. We led our show with the news of the Blue Jays signing Anthony Santander, and let's bring in Shai Davidi of SportsCenter. Is going to help us break it down even further. Shai, how's it going?
All right, how are you guys?
We finally got some really good Blue Jays news, and I mean that sincerely. Like, I think the Anthony Santander signing is really great for the Blue Jays, probably something that made a lot of sense for a while, and although it's coming a little later in the offseason, it doesn't matter. Getting him, one of the biggest free agent signings in the Blue Jays history in terms of a financial commitment. Walk us through what the Blue Jays see in Anthony Santander and what he's going to be able to bring to this baseball team, specifically in his offensive production.
I think it starts with a legitimate power hitter and one who bats from both sides of the plate, right? The Blue Jays have for years been seeking steady, consistent left-handed impact, and Santander will be able to provide them that. And when there's a tough lefty on the mound, he doesn't disappear on you because you just turn around and provide similar production from the right side. So in that way, it's an ideal fit. And look, we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, ever since Teoscar Hernandez was traded. The Blue Jays haven't had that real cleanup hitter presence to hit behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think there are some ideas that he's probably going to end up batting cleanup, although I'm sure that the Blue Jays will look at certain matchups and perhaps move him somewhere in that 2-3-4 range, depending on the day and the matchup. But this is a player who will give you a lot of power. And, it's not a complete player. He's not going to be amazing on the bases. He's not going to get on base a ton. He's going to get a career on base percentage around .310. But that thump, it's a real threat. It's going to be steady production, and it's the type of impact the Blue Jays have long been looking for the middle of their lineup.
Shai, is this the shining or most shining example of the patient approach that we've seen from the Blue Jays in many off seasons here finally paying off? I mean, it's a big deal. It's worth $90+ million over 5 years, but it's not backbreaking by any means. Like, it feels totally reasonable, and this is an unreasonable time in many ways.
Yeah, and I think the element that's going to get lost a little bit because it's complicated, but the Major League Baseball and Players Association is still working through exactly what the present value of that contract is going to look like, because there's some significant financial deferrals in there. So the hit to the competitive balance tax is going to be less than the $18.5 million annual average value of this contract. And so this is, it's a, from a team perspective, a better number than it sort of looks like on paper. And it's not a backbreaking number by any means, as you mentioned. So I think this is a type of deal that will allow them to continue looking for other things in the marketplace. And you're right. I mean, this deal is definitely not happening in November. Now, we can have a debate on, if something like this gets done earlier in the offseason, does it maybe open up other pathways for you? I think there's certainly a conversation to be had about that. But from a value perspective, from a dollars perspective, I think you can look at this and certainly say, yeah, the Blue Jays did well by being patient and sticking to their discipline.
All right, so Anthony Santander, one of a few additions for the Blue Jays this offseason. So what's next? I think, getting the pulse of where the Blue Jays fans are at least. I think there's a clamoring for maybe another offensive piece, maybe someone like an Alonso or a Bregman or another starting pitcher. Like, where do you think they're currently playing in the waters of free agency and who they might be able to add?
Look, I still think they're going to continue seeing if that patience and discipline provides them another player of impact. And I think as much as that they're looking for specific types of players, and yeah, I mean, you could plug Pete Alonso's 40-plus homer power into that lineup too, and all of a sudden we're having much different conversations about this Blue Jays offense. But I can see them going in a number of different directions. And the fact that they participated in the Tanner Scott Derby, don't think they were necessarily close or a factor at the end, but the fact that they were trying there at all just shows that they're interested in finding impact wherever they can get it. And so I think from an offensive standpoint, one player that interests me and to some degree fits some of the things they've talked about in terms of balancing out the lineup and trying to diversify it a bit is maybe Jerks and Profar. I don't know where things stand there, or if he's definitively a target, but I can see that being the right type of fit for them. And Santander does not rule them out of that, and does not rule them out of other moves. So the Blue Jays have really approached this with a bit of an open mind about where this is going to go. I think going into the offseason, you would have looked at it and said, yeah, they get Santander, that makes sense. It's been a bit of a circuitous path to him, but that one's fallen into place. And I do think they'll be flexible in other ways to get whatever they feel like is going to have the most impact on the roster.
So I don't think the Santander deal illuminates some sort of philosophical switch or flip for the Blue Jays, given that, you know, we know they've wanted to get the cleanup hitter they've been without for several years now. But you mentioned Alonso, and the low-hanging fruit thing is something that everyone sort of harkens back to. But all of a sudden, if they sign two of the guys who over the last 3 years have hit fourth and fifth most home runs, or fourth and sixth most home runs in the entire league, it would be, you know, not touting run prevention. Not with Santander alone have we seen a shift, as I mentioned, but have we seen some sort of shift here, at least with the thought process with the general management or the management of this team and how they, you know, they aim to assemble a lineup?
Hey, low-hanging fruit can be delicious too, right? I don't think we've seen a shift. I don't think, like, this Blue Jays front office, the more that we try to sort of, you know, black and white them, like, they just don't think in those terms. They'll just, my sense of them is that they'll just more look at things in terms of impact. And Santander has been a 3-win player the past couple of years, and you're putting that onto your team. I mean, you could feel pretty confident that he's going to be in that range again. He should do a lot of damage to, you know, right and left center field at the Dome with the way that he hits. So his game should really play at the stadium. I think that you can expect that again, and you're getting a 3-win player. That's what they're after. You know, Jeff Hoffman to me is the signing that is most representative of a shift for the Blue Jays, right? They hadn't made that kind of lunge for a reliever in a decade under Ross Atkins. But, you know, you're talking about a 2-win reliever. I mean, you have to be really good to be a 2-win reliever. And that's Jeff Hoffman. So the Blue Jays ended up diving into that market there. And that's not something I would have expected them to do going into the offseason. You know, hunting for, Santander on a term that's a little bit more agreeable, Alonso potentially on a shorter term. Those are deals that really fit in line kind of with the way the Blue Jays approach things. So I don't know if that's a shift per se. The one area, like I said, that where I do feel we saw something different was with Hoffman.
Yeah, it just feels like pure valuations games. And I guess with Hoffman, yeah, he was valued at what the Orioles or Braves were going to give him, and then he comes in at a shorter price for the Blue Jays, and that feels like a fair or even positive EV valuation. And that might be the game that we're playing, or the Blue Jays are playing, and that we're trying to put a finger on. With Santander, Shy, you know, there's the limitations, or I guess the weak points are pretty obvious. Not necessarily a walks guy. Getting on base may be an issue. The defensive limitations might be there as well. But are these things overstated to any extent, in your opinion? Are there ways in which Santander can make improvements to his game at 30 years old?
Well, sure, there are always ways that guys can get better. And, you know, he's still got a couple more years of peak left before he might start entering some decline there. So you'd hate to say that the guy's a finished product. But, I mean, if he gives the Blue Jays something akin to what he delivered for the Orioles last year, you'd probably see cartwheels in the Blue Jays front office. Right. And because that's hard to find. And that's sort of what they need. Right. The Blue Jays have had guys get on base. They've done they've created a lot of innings the past couple of years, but they really haven't cashed them in, and they haven't had the extra base pop, you know, those game breaking swings that really allow you to take advantage of guys who get on base. And so Santander is a piece that they didn't have. And that to me is really helps counter some of the other stuff. Are there times where he doesn't maybe score from first on a ball in the gap where you're like, oh, that base running shows up? Or, and I'll be interested to see what else they add if they add another outfielder. But depending on how much he's playing in the field, you know, occasionally there's a play that doesn't get made. You're like, okay, that shows up there. But when the ball goes over the fence or the ball goes off the fence and it's two or three runs coming home, all of a sudden you'll be like, okay, that's what we haven't seen over the past couple of years. And I think that's what the Blue Jays are really counting on in a big way to overcome some of the other issues that you mentioned.
We're chatting with Shai Davidi of Sportsnet as we unpack the Anthony Santander signing. Let's shift back to Friday afternoon when we found out that the Blue Jays were not the winners of the Roki Sasaki sweepstakes. Obviously, everyone's had like a couple days to unpack the frustration, I think, that many feel. But I guess my biggest question for you, Shai, is why Roki Sasaki decided to go. Like, what was different about this recruiting process was kind of the financial situation and the Dodgers being able to win another player. But the decision to add money and a contract that wasn't, you know, the greatest for the Blue Jays right before they lost. I was really a believer that they were going to get Roki Sasaki, if you know what I mean. So, you know, maybe if you've unpacked any reason to why they finished second once again on another big name.
Well, I think that you can understand that. Let's start here. The baseball industry long expected Sasaki was going to the Dodgers. And some people believe that he was going there all along and that everybody else was playing for second. So I do think there's that. You know, I think the Blue Jays, the straw deal, which certainly became a topic of conversation, not only among Blue Jay fans, but within the wider baseball industry as well, was their way, I think, of doing everything they can to even marginally raise their odds of landing Sasaki. And I don't think they saw that as taking on Straw's contract as something that would prevent them from doing other things and finding ways to improve the ball club. And, you know, Santander would certainly work there. And, you know, the fact that there's some deferrals in Santander's deal can, depending on how the final math ends up landing, but it can sort of negate the impact of Straw's money on the collective balance tax in one stroke. So I don't think it's as debilitating as people made it out to be. But it was reflective of just how much they wanted him. And should they have done that? Was that something that was necessary? I think there's concerns about what within the industry, but what this does to future trades for international bonus pool room. I think there are a lot of elements there. But I think it's a fascinating swing in so many ways by the Blue Jays, and one that you can certainly make a case for was unnecessary. One you can certainly make the case for was egregious. But I also think it's a matter of perspective. You can also look at it and say, okay, that was just really aggressive. That's a team that's going all out. And I think it comes down to where you land on how deep they should have gone onto it. Should they have just thought to themselves, yeah, he's going to the Dodgers. Let's keep our powder dry. Or do you say, like, even if it's a 20% chance or 30% chance, let's just do everything in our power and it's just money at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it's the gamble that way and it's just money at the end of the day and you plan on spending it, it's not the biggest deal in the world. But I'm hung up on one thing, Shai, and it's that, you know, the Jays are placing second. You mentioned long expected to go to the Dodgers. You know, we know why the Jays are not placing first in a lot of these, and that's just because the LA Dodgers exist. So what is the best explanation then for them separating themselves from everyone else? How did they get so involved in the Shohei deal when it was all along we expect the LA Dodgers? Same thing with Roky Sasaki. All along you expect the Dodgers. Are there some impracticalities to wading into these waters when the expectation is the Dodgers? What are the Jays doing that others are not doing in order to come second? I think that's my big question and something I just can't really shake.
Yeah, and it really is a great question. I think ultimately it comes down to your philosophy, right? Do you take, not to quote The Simpsons, but do you take like a can't win, don't try approach to it? Or do you say, you know what, even if it's a 5% possibility, it doesn't cost us anything, the Sasaki and Straw thing aside, it doesn't cost us anything to try and make this happen. And as long as we're not taking ourselves out of more, say, achievable or probable pursuits, why not position ourselves to be a choice in case the front runner ends up collapsing? And I think that it becomes frustrating to fans, understandably so, definitely frustrating to the Blue Jays front office, and then, leave yourself open to all kinds of barbs to continually end up not getting the player that you've targeted, right? And whether it was Ohtani or Soto, and with Soto, the Mets were going to be high bid come hell or high water. And, you know, with Corbin Burns, he desperately wanted to get home. You know, should you pursue that at the risk of, you know, frustrating people? Or do you try and say, well, let's see, maybe the Los Angeles Dodgers get cold feet. Maybe the Mets cry uncle. Maybe Burns has a change of heart. Or the Arizona Diamondbacks don't get involved to the last second. You know, if you're a front office, you're trying to win, I can't see how you don't try. You know what I mean? At the same time, that has to be balanced against, are you making sure that you're taking advantage of the more probable pursuits? And you can argue that the backup plan wasn't good enough last offseason. You can also argue that the other alternatives last offseason were worth pursuing. But this offseason, there was less of an excuse because the market contained far more of what the Blue Jays need. And, you know, that they've gotten Santander says, okay, well, you know, you didn't let the opportunity slide by in quite the same way as you did a year ago. So it's a fascinating conversation. I think part of it too, and maybe this is where you tip the scales, it depends on how much faith you have in a front office, you know, and if a front office has the faith of fans and the like, then I think you can take these shots and you're not going to get the kind of criticism you have when, you know, the Blue Jays are coming off, you know, the two frustrating postseasons and the disappointment of last year. So I know that's a really long-winded answer. I'm sorry for kind of droning on about that, but I've thought about it at a really deep level over the past few days and conversed about it at a really deep level the past couple of days. And I really think it just comes down to, you know, your perspective on it and your faith in the people making the decisions.
Well, Shai, we appreciate your time tonight, and good to see the Blue Jays getting someone in Anthony Santander, and hopefully there's some more moves to come. We're going to let you run. Enjoy the night, and thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it, guys. Be well.
That's Shai Davidi of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, of course. We got about 30 seconds, and I kept thinking about saying close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, but they got one. And Anthony Santon there.
They got one. Maybe they'll get a couple other ones.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an optimistic turn over the weekend after the low point. See if the Blue Jays continue accomplishing things.
All right, that's it for us tonight. Enjoy the night, and we'll see you tomorrow. That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now.